Imagine this. You're reading a story and start noticing after a little while that some things don't add up. Facts start to contradict reality or established canon or even one another. And you get the sense that the entire narrative structure may be attempting to pull one over on you. Now, it could be that you're just losing your mind. Or it could be that you're reading a story with an unreliable narrator. Or are you?
The Lies Authors Tell on the Trumpcast.
Welcome to episode 9 of the Tropecast. This is Michael Thorne of TearsAndPain.com, Tears and Pain webcomic. And we are joined today by...
your mom.
Why don't you give those dungarees I bought you, Adam?
Actually, okay, all right.
ThisGuy.net.
All right. And I admit I am not actually Michael Thorne. I am Adam Smithy of theappleofdiscord.com and webcomichell.com. And I was doing that to prove a point, which we'll get to in just a minute here. We're rejoined by our longtime veteran Tropecast correspondent, Jules.
Hiya, Jules Vera of ValkyrieSquadron.com.
As well as Fess, who is lurking around in the wings, as he usually is on such an occasion. And the point that I was making there is that of the unreliable narrator. When you're an author, when you're creating something, you have your hand on the nozzle of truth. And most people tend to set it wide open. But that doesn't actually have to be the case. As the person who is telling the story, as the person who's controlling the flow of information, you have it in your power, for better or worse, to turn that nozzle down a little bit, to bring the flow of truth to a trickle, or perhaps a complete halt. It's a great narrative device if you can use it properly, and you can do some really neat things with stories by essentially blatantly lying to your audience, which is what all of today's tropes are going to be about. It is the lies that authors tell. In this first segment, we're going to talk about lies that authors tell on purpose for the betterment of a story. And we'll get to the differentiation between that and the third class when we get to it. But basically, these are tropes that are
Well, basically, it's the author trying to screw with your head. We're so trusting of the narrator of a story. We just, everything he or she says, we take it at face value. Oh, yes, everything is really good. Yes, oh, yes, everything you're telling me is right. I think this goes back to, the oldest example I can pull off is Edgar Allan Poe's The Raven, where he starts talking about his lost Lenore and everything, and you start to wonder if this dude just completely gone bonkers, at a certain point in the poem. But it introduces the idea that maybe the person telling this story is completely off his rocker and we shouldn't trust him. And that's one of the oldest examples that I can think of. You see more modern examples such as Inception, for the one guy in Kentucky who has not seen it, the unreliable narrator thing going on at the end. What else?
Well, there's the usual suspects where he's not crazy. The Usual Suspects is using a subtrope of the unreliable narrator, which is the unreliable expositor. Because there isn't really a narrator so much, but let's just go straight on and say there are going to be so many spoilers in this that if you haven't heard of any of these things, just run away now. But yeah, in Usual Suspects, was it Kevin Spacey is playing a man named Verbal Kent who tells this tale of this horrible, horrible person named Kaiser Soze, who's led this intricate like web of crime and people doing all these bad things. And then at the very end of the story, you realize he is actually Kaiser Soze. There either never was a Verbal Kent, or if there was, there was somebody else. And he's made all of these different facts up, like on the fly, to give a convincing backstory to the police officer that he's telling it to.
Go ahead.
Sixth Sense. You know, that's not really, they never lied to you because they never actually told you that Bruce Willis was alive. Mm-hmm. In fact, several times explicitly through the movie, they kind of tell you that he's not. But because the audience isn't expecting the main character to already be dead, it makes the story actually work that much better. Unfortunately, it turned out to be that's like the only trick that M. Night Shyamalan has. So the rest of his movies were significantly worse. And The Others did the same thing. The Others was the exact same trick of narrative where you got a family living in a, like moving into an old house that they think is haunted, with all of these different people like appearing and disappearing and furniture being moved. And then at the end of the story, you find out that the people that they've been seeing are not ghosts. They're alive. The people that you've been watching the entire movie are the ones that are actually dead.
What? See, yes. It's that kind of switcheroo thing that can make stories very interesting.
With a twist.
Yes. Yeah.
Twist.
you mentioned Edgar Allan Poe, and I'm curious that you went with The Raven, because I would think The Telltale Heart is probably even more of an unreliable narrator, because you got the story, the guy's saying that he killed the old man, cut out his heart and hid it under the floorboards, and he hears it pounding and he knows that they're coming for him and they're going to find out. And of course, the thing that he's actually hearing is his own heart beating and he's freaking out because of it, but it's written from a first person point of view that the guy is sure that it's actually the old man's hideous beating heart that's coming for him.
Well, I'm not exactly a Poe expert. That was just the thing that popped into my head at first. That's all.
Oh, no, it's
by no means a Poe expert. In fact, I'm quite crappy when it comes to Edgar Allan Poe works. But you know, that was at least one thing I could pull up and go, yes, this is a thing that I know. And I'm trying to sound knowledgeable. Damn it, you're ruining it.
Sorry.
Good job, Adam.
Let's see some of the other ones that One of the ones that if they're doing this, especially if they're they'll pull this one a lot when they're doing prophecies and different things like that, is exact words, which is where you have a story that predicts something is going to happen, or you know, someone makes a wish or any number of different things, and the exact words that they said, you know, like I've seen a bunch of different things where they say that, you know, so and so will not be defeated by the hand of man. And
oh yeah, Eowyn from Lord of the Rings,
amongst other things. There's been a lot of people that have used that. And then, you know, it's a woman or it's a badger or something that actually defeats him. Mm-hmm. So because yeah, it's The author can use that to, with foreshadowing, set up something that should be impossible so that the audience isn't even expecting that is a reality. and then blindsides you with it because they can just drop that out of nowhere. And then when you go back, you get that "I see what you did there" moment for just a second, because
that's what happens when you live on TV tropes.
Yes, yes, it is. You'd said, I know we've covered red herrings in the past, but red herrings are another good one of these. You want to hit red herrings?
Oh, well, let's see, red herrings.
I vaguely recall someone saying they were the queen of red herrings.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
What's that?
That was me. Okay. let's see. See, the only story I'm really known for is Marsh Rocket, but there is kind of a red herring coming up in Valkyrie, which I can't talk about right now because then that would spoil it, and then there that goes. But it's interesting that somebody in the forums has already pointed out that, oh, well, you know, the main character, Pris, maybe she's involved with the big stupid jock guy, and... you know, it is possible that she could, in fact, be romantically connected to the big stupid jock guy. I mean, I've known plenty of intelligent, wonderful women have horrible taste in men. But it is entirely possible that there is some other gentleman in her life that, you know, there's a lot of kind of sidestepping there. A lot of people are guessing. And I don't know why everybody cares about this. But people are starting to guess, oh, well, maybe she's with this guy. Maybe she's with that guy. Ooh, I have to know. And I'm like, really? This is a thing? So yeah, so there is going to be kind of a red herring reveal with that. Because I throw some clues at you in another direction and make something seem like, oh, well, you know, that's not possible. But probably you'll find out by probably early August what the whole reveal is. And it's not a big reveal. It's not, you know, it's something that... And with Marsh Rocket, pretty much all of Chapter 4 shows that he's playing possum for a lot of his mission in getting this briefcase back. And, you know, there's a red herring that he throws to, you know, the gangsters to steal the briefcase and eventually just, you know, win the day, sort of. So this is a thing I do kind of a lot.
No, it's... There's, I'm trying to think if I've ever really used any red herrings. I know this is a bit of a spoiler, but that's completely fine by me. In the upcoming, by the end of the current arc on Apple Valley, out of the three characters, Dr. Hubris, the Archer, and Gabby, one of them will defect to the side of evil, one of them will die, and one of them will be captured by the bad guys.
So Dr. Hubris... I kind of wonder if Dr. Hubris is going to be the bad guy. Because of his hubris! I'm just throwing that out.
Well, he's already sort of the bad guy, but he's the friendly sort of evil. That's he's got a little bit of Black Mage from 8-Bit Theater in him. He's the friendly sort of sociopath that you hope is on your side as opposed to someone else's. But yeah, there's a let's see, what is there's also a really neat one. This doesn't work so much with print, but it works really well with television, and it also would work with webcomics, which is the unreliable voiceover. And these are usually, these can be funny, these can be poignant, these can be, you can play them a bunch of different ways. But basically, it's the voiceover, whether it being an actual voiceover or, you know, like the little square boxes that have
The captions
is describing events that took place in the past, but when we actually see the events that took place in the past, they are completely different. Like I said, it could be that the person who's retelling the event is significantly altering history to make themselves look better.
it could be that they're covering up something bad that happened, you know, like telling the story of how they accidentally hit a deer and then ran off the road, and in truth they ran over a hobo or something, you know. That, but it can be, you can use it to show not only a truth, but you can use it to show that the person who's not telling the truth is being dishonest, and you can do that to build some serious character depth there, because you can also, you can show, you know, like, or it could be that the person completely misinterpreted the events, you know, like, they walked into one of those places that gay men all met in the 70s, like the bathhouse, and did not understand what's going on. And their accounting of the story as they're telling it is, you know, like, oh, and it was wonderful. There were all these guys, and there was this sense of camaraderie and brotherhood, and you see, like, gay guys going at it in the background and all sorts of stuff like that. You realize, okay, this person just has no clue what's going on in the world around them.
Missed the point.
If you overlap multiples of these, then you get the Rashomon, which is also just completely awesome. Named for Kurosawa, his film Rashomon. And it's where you have one story being told multiple times, but from individual different point of views. And there, it's not really an issue as to universal truth. It's an issue to individual truths. Each person has their own unique point of view, their way of remembering things, their way of relating the things that they remember. And you can use it. I've seen it usually in longer running series, where they're trying to establish more characterization, especially for some of the lesser used characters. They'll whip out a Rashomon on you, where it's, you know, like, or one of the big things taken from the actual Rashomon movie is if you've got like a court scene, where you've got all of these different people giving testimony, you can show, you know, everybody has a different take on the sequence of events. I'm just trying to think some of the things that I've seen that on. I know X-Files did it with the Pizza Boy vampire in like the fourth season, where Scully thought that somebody was using like a date rape drug to kill people, and Mulder thought the Pizza Boy was a vampire, and the two of them are telling completely different versions of the story to Skinner, and then they have to go back because it turns out that the Pizza Boy was a vampire who was using a date rape drug to knock people out so that he could kill them. So, no, that would be tacky. and then Leverage did one in the last season that was actually called, I think, The Rashomon Job, making reference to the trope, which told of like all of the different people on Leverage trying to steal an ancient artifact years before they formed their crew, when it was all of them acting as individuals, but were all taking place. I think it was actually called like the Dagger of Rashomon was the item that they were trying to get to, just to drive home the fact that the people who write Leverage have read TV Tropes. So, anybody else got any things they can immediately think of that are specifically authors misdirecting the audience on purpose?
Well, J.K. Rowling possibly, you know, on purpose or accidentally ended up being very, very good at working this into Harry Potter. Like, you know, she did it, like, very deliberately in the first Harry Potter book by making Snape the red herring for Voldemort's, you know, lackey and whatnot.
She does that to the bitter end.
What's that?
She does that to the bitter end. Snape is the bad guy.
Yeah, that's true. But I mean, it was especially, you know, evident in the very first book. And then, like, because she just ended up with such an inordinate amount of detail in the books, you know, she ended up seeing her fans, like, obsessing over the smallest details. Like, there was a kettle in the corner of this room when this conversation happened. Maybe there was an animagus inside it who killed people. And, yeah, all sorts of ridiculousness like that.
Well, the problem was half of the time the fans were right.
Yeah.
I mean, I remember there was the note that was at the bottom of the bowl full of potion had the initials RB on it. And then there was wild, rampant fan guessing that that was like a one of the Black family, which turned out to be completely correct. That was Regellus Black's note that he'd left him. So there was... but yeah, she was really good or bad, I guess, about leaving a bunch of Chekhov's guns lying around unfired, red herrings and everything like that. And the thing was, she'd throw so many of them at you, it became hard to tell which ones were... Like, the first book, when she wasn't really intentionally doing it, people were less. But by the, like, third book, it was every single thing that she had in there probably meant something to somebody about something.
Yeah, that's because in the third book, Sirius Black, who was only named briefly in the very first book at the very beginning, came back and was this really important character. And so, you know, the fans kind of went, oh. Wow, there's like more to this series than we thought. And so they went crazy looking back at all the detail and everything that had been included. And the speculation just took off from there.
Well, still, she handled it fairly well because it didn't turn into a giant cluster of unanswered questions, unlike, Lost. which, you know, Lost did not make sense from episode one out. I stand by this statement. I don't think J.J. Abrams knew what he was doing from the beginning. I think he was faking it the entire time. He was like, all right, let's put a bunch of ideas into a hat, and any of them that we grab, we're going to write into this episode as something important.
Kept
doing that for five seasons.
Like the Family Guy manatees and South Park.
Pretty much come out and said since then, yeah, we've been pretty much pulling this out of our butts since then. So, you know.
That's getting into the other realm that we're gonna hit at the end, which is the lies that authors tell when they are being lazy or trying to cover their own asses. I think we can probably... We're feeling breaky. We're going to take a break for a couple of minutes. Is Fess back yet? Fess is back. So. Okay. Let's go ahead and take a couple of minute breaks so that everybody can put their brains back in the correct upright locked position, close about 60 of the TV Tropes windows that they probably have open, and when we return, we are going to hit the second batch of these, which are real world actual lying to people. So, back in a couple.
This program is a part of the Webcast Beacon Network and is hosted on the Rampage Network. Follow us on Twitter at the Tropecast. Email us at tropecast@gmail.com or leave us a voicemail by calling 1-320-310-0922. The Webcast Beacon Network, covering and promoting creativity and the creative process since 2007. Webcomics, comic news, tropes, and web fiction at webcastbeacon.com. Now, back to our show.
Welcome back to the Tropecast, episode 9. Today we are covering the lies that authors tell. We were just discussing lies that they tell on purpose because they're trying to make the story better.
Now we're going to take a break from that sort of thing for a couple of minutes and talk about real, actual world lying. Like the lying creator, which is where you have a writer who just blatant, you know, like people at a convention ask them if something is going to happen. They're like, oh, that's never going to happen. And then they turn around and do it three episodes later or in the next book or something. Sometimes this can be a result of, you know, outside interference. But a lot of times when you've got somebody who's got a unique vision and is more or less the only person with the hands on the reins, they might do this just to keep the story interesting or to keep the readers or viewers guessing. Or it could be that they just really like messing with people's heads. I'm trying to think of a good example of some of these things. I know one of the things, I was a huge Buffy fan, and one of the things that Joss Whedon had always said was that there was never going to be an episode like the episode that they wound up doing in season 6 that was called Normal Again, which is where Buffy is fighting this monster, and she's fighting this monster, and then suddenly she's in an insane asylum. And the entire thing of her being a slayer is just a delusion. And, oh, here we go. Yes, that's, help me out here, guys.
I wasn't a Buffy fan. I can't help you there, dude.
Okay, no, but something else where,
you know,
an author has clearly, you know, authors tell things at press conferences, or, another thing off of this is the where the cover is just, you know, like, the cover for a book features something that does not actually happen in the book or is not even close to it. There's one of the infamous video games, the Big Rig. I'll have to look it up and see what it is. It's a trucking game where it's supposed to be you're racing semis. Except for the fact that there really isn't any actual racing in it, because the game is so badly designed and made that when you start, none of the other semis move. And there, it shows, like, cops chasing you and you breaking through fences, and there's no cops in the game, and there's no fences, and you can't actually break into anything because they didn't bother to program collision boundary detection into the game, so the truck just passes straight through solid objects, like trees and houses and mountains and bridges, which means if you try to drive over a bridge, you just fall into the canyon. But that's okay, because you can't die. You just drive. Yeah, pretty much. You just drive down. So there are times when, or it could be that a creator can't tell people what's going on. You know, that they
NDAs.
Yes, there's that. Or they're holding on to something because they know that, Cloverfield, J.J. Abrams again, was not going to be called Cloverfield. It was going to be called something else. I think he was planning on, like, Monstrous. But so many people, like, one of the posters got out before Cloverfield was supposed to be, like, the original poster had no words on it at all. And then one of the Monstrous posters that was the same image but with the word Monstrous on it got out. And then they were like, no, that's not supposed to be the thing. We're calling it Cloverfield. Yeah, that's the secret test name that we've been developing it under. And we're just going to run with it. Which all, and then there is the creator that cannot make up their mind, which is the flip-flop of God trope, which is where multiple times when asked the same question, a creator comes up with decidedly different answers. Just because, oh, and they got a section on Potter in here, which we were talking about. let's see here.
This is called dead air.
Well, you could help. Some of you, you guys could help talk. Someone other than me talk while I look up more things to talk about.
One example of the flip-flop of God is Rumiko Takahashi always replies to any sort of pregnant Ranma problem. Oh. By saying, I don't think about that, and neither should you.
Seriously?
For those who don't know what Ranma is, Ranma One Half is an anime, well, a manga originally, but an anime as well, wherein this boy named Ranma is cursed by a spring to turn into a female whenever he is splashed with cold water.
Yeah, so this is one of the classic gender-bending, jump back and forth. Oh, I'm a girl. Oh, I'm a boy. And you'd have people have crushes on Ranma as a girl. Like, I think that big kind of tough guy loved Ranma as a girl. Ranma as a guy was destined to be with Akane, who was a giant screaming witch or whatever. And, you know, there was a lot of that back and forth. But then one particularly disturbed individual asked, well, what if Ranma got pregnant? Which, I mean, I'm not sure how the biology would work, but...
It's a legitimate question. It's a legitimate question. It piques someone's curiosity. What would happen in that situation?
Anyway. I don't know. My knowledge of tranny biology is not that great, and I could just imagine Rumiko Takahashi at the time going, what the crap did you just ask me? But then later she's like, need some story material, because Ranma went on forever. Oh my god, there was at least 20 volumes of it. So, you know, naturally she probably needed some material, and she's like, oh, hey, let's do pregnant Ranma thing, because I don't know.
You know, I have no problem with creators borrowing from the fanon if, you know, I mean, if it so suits them. I have a bit of a confession. I inadvertently watched one of the new My Little Pony episodes yesterday.
Oh, it's okay. I hear that's actually really good.
It is. It shouldn't be as good as it is. But so I was reading
awesome
up on it. I was reading up on it last night, and apparently after 4chan fell in love with it and took it over and started naming some of the unnamed ponies that were like background characters, the show has actually run with some of the names that 4chan gave them. Like there was one that, due to an animator error, had like crossed eyes in just like appeared in the
Derpy
background.
Derpy Hooves.
Yes, that one. And 4chan took it over, named it Derpy Hooves. And now it has officially, like, I think they tried to name it Ditzy or something, and that didn't stick. So now it's Derpy Hooves in
canon.
That's
awesome.
Thank you, 4chan.
I will admit, sometimes if something comes up in the comment section of a comic that I'm working on that actually is a better idea than what I thought of, I was like, I'm not ashamed to say that I've stolen some of my readers' ideas and going, oh, that's a better idea than what I had in mind. We'll just do that. But, you know, I don't make it a point to say that, you know, the story's going one way or another. So you never know when I do it.
Mm-hmm.
Just stay nice and quiet. Maybe not. I mean,
you just sit back and watch it. It's like a goldfish in a bowl. You just watch them swim around.
See, the key there is being as coy as you possibly can. anytime somebody always asks about a future plot point, I say I can neither confirm nor deny it.
Oh, I need to get back into story comics, guys.
Well,
it's hard to do, like, it's hard to do that kind of drama when you do an autobiographical slice of life comic.
Not for me. Not for me. That sort of drama happens in my real life.
It happens in my life too. I just don't draw about those.
I would never do a slice of life comic because my life is completely uninteresting. Pretty much my commentary would be the only amusing thing in it because the things that actually happen to me are incredibly boring. And that's okay. I like to live boringly. It's great. Nobody gets arrested. Nobody owes anybody any money. Nobody gets, you know, unduly pregnant. I mean, it works out for me. But I can never make a comic out of it because it'd be totally unreadable. Like, wait a minute, you just got up Saturday morning and drew some comics? That's it? God, you're boring. I'd be like, well, yes. That's how the shit gets done.
Sorry. I do this comic for you bitches.
And for free.
Yeah.
Well, and, let's branch out into another wing of the flip-flop here, which is depending on the writer. Because when you've got multiple authors that are all putting input into the same story, especially if they're doing it simultaneously, you can get a lot of different interpretations going on of, we were talking about DC earlier and the DC continuity reboot. How many different actual Supermen have there been? I mean, I know it's all technically Clark Kent, Kal-El, right? But Superman can leap over a building. No, he actually flies. And he could punch a hole in the sun, but he gets hit by a car and knocks him down. You know, there's, depending upon the nature of the story, the things that the writer needs, and the specific agendas that that writer is trying to push out at that time, characterization can go all over the map, but it's, is it a lie? Is it just there are multiple truths? You know, is it, Blade Runner, you know, was he a replicant? Mm-hmm. No one knows.
He was definitely kind of a creepy rapist-y type.
Well, yeah, but was he...
Get back over here. No, wait, no.
Yeah, that scene was uncomfortable.
That scene was really like, wait a minute, what's going on here? Uh-oh.
I just saw that movie the first time last summer, and I was like, what the... Did that? It's a little rapish.
He's a little rapey, yeah.
A little rapey.
And this is Harrison Ford in his height. I mean, seriously, there wasn't a woman on this planet who wouldn't do him. So yeah, I don't know why he had to get down like that.
Yeah.
If I could get into a time machine and go back to 1980, whatever it was, and he would go bang Harrison Ford, I totally would. Totally would. But yeah, he had to get all weird. So... one thing that I'd like to bring up, and this is so tiny and minor, but this is something that somebody brought up recently, and I'm like, oh, interesting. So depending on the writer, this is a reference to Star Wars, and we all try to forget Episode 1 because it was so very terrible and scarred our brains forever and just made us just hate much of Star Wars. But... The character Darth Maul was easily the most enjoyable thing because he A, said nothing, and B, actually kicked a lot of ass. So he pretty much was the most watchable thing in that movie. And I believe Lucas had at one point said that, oh, well, all of Darth Maul's race, you know, the Dathomir people, you know, they're all evil, yeah. Which is kind of racist when you think about it. I mean, it's an imaginary race, but wow. Dark guy with weird kind of dark horns on his head, and oh, but he has to be evil just because he looks not—he's not all that pretty. So if you actually see the trailer for the new Star Wars: The Old Republic game that's coming out soon, you actually see one of these guys, but he's a good Jedi, and I'm like, oh, I see how it is. We're recanting what Lucas said because what Lucas said was kind of stupid.
Yeah, but, I mean, take a look at Dungeons & Dragons. It always lists, you know, like, tieflings, for instance, which got made into player characters for the fourth edition without it, like core player characters. You know, I play my characters usually on the chaotic good side, and like every bit of source material they've got there is how like tieflings are struggling against their dark, evil past and stuff. And I was like, no, I'm just going to be an asshole with magic and like a tentacle head because I can. And it was awesome. I was Perry the Tiefling Warlock, and I made giant cantrips of obscene gestures in the sky to tell people where I was. Because I could. And because Perry was kind of special that way. Anyway, but yeah, it's especially when you deal with like unilateral things, you like when they say that's one of the things, and we're gonna get to that, we're gonna take a break here, and we're gonna get to like holes that people have dug themselves into that they turn around and then have to dig themselves back out of. But whenever an author, you know, makes a unilateral statement like that, and says, you know, all blank are blank, and then two seasons later they need one that isn't, you know, they're,
yeah, like saying,
they're,
oh, Borg are bad. Well, you know, no, they found a few Borg that were able to be saved, and they're actually kind of okay when you sever them from the collective. They're not so bad.
And they're hot.
Immensely.
I never saw what everybody saw in her. I missed Kez. But that's just me.
Wait, you'd rather have Kez over Jeri Ryan? Really?
Yeah.
Well, she was kind of this cute girl next door type, and Jeri Ryan was more like this hot, ultra frost queen. But she's immensely hot and wears an impossible outfit. Seriously, that outfit cannot exist in reality without lots and lots of duct tape.
Well, yeah, but I don't know. I think it was the ice queen thing that put me off on her. She's just, I don't know.
And that's true. Kes was really warm and friendly and nice. Okay, all right. I think you got me. All right.
There is something to be said for not being frigid.
Yeah, not being a total frost queen. Okay, you got me. All right.
In case you're playing along at home, we're talking about Star Trek, so you can take a drink.
Yeah, but George Lucas has a bullfrog neck, so we decided to move on.
All right, fine. We're going to go ahead, take a break, and then we're going to move into what is probably going to be the most fun and also the most destructive, which is lies that authors tell when they are just covering their own asses or being lazy. So we're going to have some fun with this next one coming up here, and we'll be back in a couple.
It's safe to
That was Liar by Buck Brothers, found at musicgallery.com by Mevio.
So, coming back, we are now going to hit the much-awaited and put-off, highly destructive segment of this trope, which is the lies that authors tell when they are being lazy or they're covering their own asses. And I think the biggest one here is going to be retcon.
Because, retcon!
Now, for those who are not in the know, and I know that there are some of you out there, retcon is short for retroactive continuity. It's a concept that they started, I think comic books like Marvel and DC are the most famous for retcon, but it's sort of started seeping into a lot of different things. And essentially the principle behind it is that whenever you have a body of fiction that is all in canon, which reaches a significant dearth, for lack of a better term, you're going to start running out of places to go in that universe that people haven't already covered in previous stories. What retcon does is it lets you pretend some of that stuff didn't happen, or pretend that it happened in a different way,
or
make connections to things that did not previously have connections, like the guy that you fought in season one was actually the underling of the guy that you're going to fight now. Even though when the guy that was created in season one was created, he was the biggest bad in the world and there was nobody more powerful than him. When they need someone more powerful than him, it's an easy task. Just sprinkle a little retcon and, oh, actually, yes, he secretly was the sub-general under the guy that you're going to fight now who's got the spiky purple hair.
His power level is over 9,000.
Yeah, what is the point of the damn scouters in Dragon Ball Z anyway? Because really, isn't nearly everyone in the show's power level over 9,000?
After a certain point.
Yeah, after a certain point, pretty much everybody does it because they all go through the magical King Kai training and then they all have to fight Cell and he's green and weird and that makes your power level higher, I guess? Don't question Dragon Ball Z logic, come on.
That's just silly.
Well, how come... I just want to know how come nobody's ever built a scouter that goes higher than 9,000.
But it goes, you know, like, it's
fighting the badass MFers who have power levels over 9,000. You can't go around engineering stuff when you're too busy fighting. That's just silly.
That's for nerds.
Yeah, cool guys fight like MMA. I'm kidding. MMA looks really homoerotic to me. I mean, I guess it can't be manly if it's homoerotic. It could be manly. But it's also, you know, two dudes rolling around on the floor. Moving on.
I'm just surprised that some British guy never showed up with a scouter that went to a power level of over 11,000.
Well, does it count in metric? You know, does your power level work the same way if you're in the System International?
They did go over 9,000. He was just pissed off that Goku was over 9,000.
He was just surprised.
Because, I mean, the first time that Goku was fighting, he could barely defeat Raditz. Now he's like 900 Raditz. You know, so that really pissed him off because he's the king of all Saiyans!
Well, I think it was
and how irritating
over 9,000 thing first. Anyway,
irritating. Do you think that must be to Raditz to be like, okay, well, good news, you're going to live on in infamy in the series. Bad news, you're going to represent a base power level which everyone else is going to be multiples of for all the rest of the entire series. So
I just got to get this in here on my YouTube account. I do have a Doctor Who over 9,000 bit from Matt Smith's first season. Because nobody else thought of it, and I got it out first, so I'm just plugging that. Anyway, moving on.
So, anyway, yeah. Retcon is the magical tool that allows Batman to meet the Joker for the first time like 7 times in a row. That and the continuity reboot, which is like a dumping a giant bucket of retcon over the entire universe and smoothing down the things. But yeah, retcon is used.
Whee! My bad nipples. Basically what they did.
Sanding down the bat nipples, yes.
You know, Alex, that actually would be a great name for a trope. We gotta see if there is a trope for undoing some horrible mistake in your canon sanding and just quietly, you're like, sanding down the bat nipples, yes.
That is pretty good. Because
that's exactly, that's a perfect name for that sort of a trope. So they may have a a trope already set up for it, but I'm sticking with that name from now on. We're going to call it sanding down the bat nipples.
Yes, I should make buttons.
But yeah, it's basically just anytime you get a body of work that has, and Fess mentioned Doctor Who, you know, that the console in the center of the TARDIS that goes up and down, that's not really a time rotor. That's a giant pump-to-pump retcon through the entire universe. Because otherwise, the Doctor would just walk into any room and be like, wait a minute, haven't I? And then there'd be like 3 more of him sitting in there and be like, oh, yes, I have been here. Because really, I know that there have been, I'm trying to think, like, the Doctor's met Marco Polo 3 times maybe in different incarnations. I'm blanking. It was a long night. But the retcon, you're like, okay, here's an example. In Doctor Who canon, established Doctor Who canon, the Daleks invaded Earth in the 1960s. And we have no idea that the Daleks invaded Earth come 2005. So where did the Daleks go?
Well, people can't even remember crap like Manifest Destiny. So people just forgot, okay? They're just stupid. They just forgot stuff.
They went to Waffle House.
I'm almost certain that people would notice a full-scale planetary Dalek invasion, especially when I think, let's see, I know it happened once during the 6th Doctor's reign. There were the dinosaurs in London and the 4th Doctor. People would remember things like that.
Never happened.
Well, they get around it by, they'll gloss over the fact that it happened, which is one of these subtropes I've got under retcon, which is the hand wave, which is where they sort of acknowledge that something may have had happened in the past, but they're not like overly worried about it. They're just gonna let it ride.
Whatever, never happened.
Well, either it never happened, or it happened, but they're not even going to try and explain it.
There was a thing.
You know, like, the guy flips the switch and pushes a button after telling them that whatever is about to happen is completely impossible, and then it happens. And they're like, I thought you said it was completely impossible, and the guy is, I thought it was impossible too. And that's all that's ever discussed of it.
Yeah, about that impossibleness of that thing? Yeah, I might have overblown that.
My bad. Well, and like I was saying earlier, this is one of those things where when an author makes in-universe an absolute statement and then needs to undo it, instead of, you know, they could seriously address it, or they can simply brush it off as being one of those things. Stargate had a lot of issues with this during its run. And I think there was
there was a thing where the Zats, the like alien handguns, you shot a person once, it stunned them. And you shot a person twice, it killed them. And then some author, like back in the second or third season, decided that if you shot a dead body with a Zat, it like dissolved or something. Which then caused all sorts of problems for every writer afterwards, and then they eventually just sort of pretended that that didn't actually happen. Except for when they would bring it back to make fun of the fact that they'd said that at one point. there was a... I'm trying to think. Wormhole Extreme was a, like, parody... it was a series based on the actual Stargate universe, but inside the Stargate universe. And they brought it up as one of the jokes. Like, they were like, how can I kiss the princess when we're standing in a room full of dead bodies? And one of the writers went, well, maybe if we shot them a third time, they dissolve. And the other writers are like, oh, I'm going to kill you. I'm going to just stab you in the face right now. You guys keep talking. I'm going to have to hang up and then go back. Something's gone crazy with my Skype. I'm hearing only myself. So,
that's not your Skype. You... That's just us listening to you.
It's echoing a lot for me.
Yeah, but it is echoing pretty badly.
I don't hear an echo, but go ahead, disconnect, reconnect.
All right, it will. Okay, so hand waves and covering your... Hello?
Hi, did it go away?
Everybody else went away.
No, did the sound problem go away?
Oh, it's much better now. Although I can hear myself a little bit.
Oh, much better.
Double check. How is everyone's check audio? Check.
Sunday. I don't know. Do I sound echoey?
A little bit, but it's clearer than it was before.
I think the echo is coming from Fass. Hello.
Hi.
I think the echo is actually coming from you, Fess. Because every time I would talk, your thing would flash after it.
Interesting. So,
seems to be better now that we've hung up and started again.
Yeah, that tends to be what happens. There's a lot of things fighting over volume control here, so. Alright, I'm out.
Okay, so. The cousin to the hand wave and the aspel is, or the hand wave and retcon is lampshading. And the lampshading is not dissimilar from the hand wave, but it's basically where the story almost breaks the fourth wall to acknowledge the fact that whatever is going on in the story does not make a lick of sense.
Yeah, it's more self-aware than the ass pull or the hand wave. Mm-hmm.
It's like sliding up to the fourth wall and, you know, jabbing it with its elbow just a little bit.
Yeah, speaking of My Little Ponies, I have not... I can't help but notice that the pink one does not appear to notice that there is a fourth wall there.
No, she doesn't.
She's aware of the audience, and on several occasions either is staring at them when the others are looking at like one another and talking, or actually addressing the audience directly. And if you address the fact that a character is doing that, that's lampshading. Like, I'm trying to think... Yeah,
seems a Malcolm lot in Naked Gun movies.
Yes, the Naked Gun movies are full of meta. They're meta layered on meta. Everybody prepare to take a drink. The Ninja Turtles movie, the Turtles Forever.
Bring that up for.
Well, It had the turtles from the 1980s, or a badly Flanderized version of them anyway, interacting with the hardcore, like, early 80s black and white turtles, and
a vast virus database has been updated.
Somebody's Avast just updated.
Aw, yeah!
Sorry.
It had the funny cartoon 80s turtles interacting with the gritty comic book turtles, interacting with the far more serious anime-style turtles of now, and the 80s Cowabunga-era turtles kept talking directly to the camera, which caused all of the other characters to go, "Who are you talking to?
What are you doing?"
Yeah.
"You're gonna pay for what you've done to me!"
Some people just can't handle change.
"Why do you keep doing that? Who are you talking to? There's no one there!"
Wow, Crisis on Infinite Turtles, man. That's deep.
Oh,
I
yeah.
It was, that happened.
It was an impressively strange... It was a great way to end a series by just like, "You know what? It's all canon. Ha 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 ha! We quit." lampshading is where even the author knows that they have done something dumb, but instead of just pretending, you know, like, "Oh yes, why aren't I clever? I'm so clever I could just, you know, travel back in time and have sex with myself." No, the author's like
poking fun at their own mistakes.
"Yeah, yeah, you caught me in this awkward situation that I've put myself in. And, yes, it is funny how that happened." Stargate did that in that the Wormhole Extreme episode that I referenced earlier. They did that as well. It had, like, the main characters were running, and they got to the edge of this cliff, and then there was this huge army standing between them and the Stargate. And then the next thing you see, it's them coming through the Stargate talking about how what they did was just impossible, but they're awesome and it worked anyway. And then the story stops because that's one of the stories they're telling, and they're going, "That doesn't actually work in reality inside the story." So it was a very, very full of this sort of trope episode. It was a really interesting time. The final one here is the ass pull, and I think everybody pretty much knows what this one is. This is sort of the authorial equivalent to did not bother to do the research beforehand, and they're just you know, it's sort of like Deus Ex Machina, but like a violent, sudden, abrupt Deus Ex Machina. And it's when you run into these, it really throws some of the other stuff that we were talking about earlier into sharp contrast. This is essentially the red herring in the Chekhov's gun minus any foreshadowing. This is where, at the end of a thing, you find out, you're at the very beginning of the thing, you're given a list of 5 suspects that it could be that killed somebody. And then at the very end, you find out that it was a 6th guy who was introduced in the last 15 minutes of the story. This is lazy, lazy writering, lazy writering. I talks good, yes. Me, no. I'm good English, dude.
You've been playing the drinking game, haven't you?
Oh, I wish. I wish. That comes next. the ass pull is used when a writer really has no idea where they're going to take what they're doing next, and they pull something, they pluck it from thin air. They
Battlestar Galactica, looking at you bitches.
Well, yes.
Oh god, just Once you finish your thought, I'll go ahead and fill in, backfill what where I was going with that. So go ahead, Rolzy.
No. That's Battlestar Galactica, the new show, is a great example of that because, well, sometimes the ass pull comes as a reaction to things like, what's his name that was left on the planet?
Sam?
No, the other guy.
Not the Sam. Guy. Which planet are we talking about? Cobol? Are we talking about Caprica?
Caprica. The guy that was left when he gave up his seat on the transport.
Oh, Hilo. Okay, yeah, him.
Yeah, he wasn't supposed to be a character for any period of time, but he tested so well with the audience that they just created huge swaths of extra stuff for him, and he wound up being this huge integral character from somebody that they really were only planning to have on there for like a couple of episodes and then kill off in a, anyone can die sentimental, we've introduced this guy as a main character now, dead. But so many people were like, that they didn't dead him, which means they then had to figure out some way to jam him into the rest of the universe. And I know
even though that was pretty improvised, it worked out. The assholes I'm talking about is in the very end of the series where, the big reason for Gaius Baltar having visions of the Caprica 6 all this time was, she's a messenger from God, you guys. And I was like, really? Really? She's a messenger from God? That's so lame. Here I'm thinking some super cool reference like, she was this chimp we planted in your head, or, she's a mutation of your brain or something, or you're a Cylon or something cool. And no, she's a messenger of God. And I'm like, that's a bunch of bollocks.
Well,
that's a bunch of hoey. What the hell is that? And don't even get me started with how Starbucks arc ended. That was just, what the hell?
It could have been worse. It could have ended with a brain dead Gaius Baltar sitting there holding a snow globe with the Galactica inside of it.
I was trying not to bring up Saint Elsewhere. I was gonna tell myself, no, we're not gonna bring that up. Not gonna bring that up because that was just too weird.
Poor Bob Newhart waking up.
But yeah, when you combine the ass pull with the ending of something, then you really just get a screw you fans, I'm never coming back to this, I really don't care.
And that's the ending of Saint Elsewhere, where, the show got canceled, seems like the writers were a bit bitter, so they just ended the whole thing with a little boy looking into a snow globe where Saint Elsewhere was allegedly taking place, and the whole thing only happened in this kid's brain. Weirdness. Well,
but then you get into the complications by the fact that Saint Elsewhere continued to cross over with other TV shows after it was revealed that it was entirely a fictional construct taking place inside the kid's head. That there is a huge universe that's named after the kid, where there's like these flowcharts online that are creepy, where you can look it up and you can see that every single thousands of TV shows are all hypothetically set in the same universe because they all share characters or shared connections. Like one of the characters from Saint Elsewhere appeared on Homicide: Life in the Streets. Munch was on Homicide: Life on the Streets. Munch appeared on all the Law and Orders. And we've seen that In Plain Sight is a derivative of one of the Law and Orders because there was a crossover between In Plain Sight and Criminal Intent. Munch appeared on The X-Files. Munch appeared on The Simpsons. So,
called the Tommy Westfall universe.
That's the one, yes.
And this is why I have a big problem with continuity and canon, and I'm not going to go into it, but yeah.
Well, you just need to rub some retcon on it and the rash will go away.
Ew.
But yeah, there's it's the problem with the ass pull is when you do it as like a giant final F you to the fans, and then you get renewed for a season. I know Blake Seven was a British sci-fi series, late 70s to early 80s, that had this problem every season. It was on for a grand sum total of 4 seasons. And it was like, at the end of the first season, they were fine, because they were renewed. At the end of the second season, they didn't know if they were going to be renewed or not, so it ended with, like, this giant explosion scattering the titular 7 characters. Like, everybody was in life pods flying in different directions, because it was a sci-fi series. And that way, when they came back for season 3... they only brought back most of the characters, and they explained that the ones they didn't brought back, they couldn't find the life pods of, and they were probably still out there somewhere. Of course, the big problem was one of the characters that disappeared at the end of season 2 of Blake 7 was Blake. So, for the last 2 seasons of Blake 7, Blake 7 was decidedly minus Blake. It was still called Blake 7, but it was Blake 7 in name only. At the end of season 3, they thought, you know what, we'll finally... They destroyed the Liberator, which was their ship. And it was, like you saw the Liberator crumbling and falling apart. And the characters that had survived walking off together all happy, and they were like, okay, yay, that's a good ending. And they were canceled. And then they were uncanceled, and they came back for a 4th season, and this time they got a new ship, and they picked up another couple of cast members. And so they got to the end of the 4th season, and apparently the writers were just done at this point. They were like, stop making us come back. This is British television. We only get to make 13 episodes a year anyway. Why are you doing this to us?
Yeah, I kind of wonder about that. Why British television is pretty stingy when it comes to making episodes for television. They're like, it's government. Oh, 6 episodes.
There's a trope for that.
It's government funded.
It's called British brevity. There's a trope for it.
Huh. I'm going to look that up.
But yeah, so the last episode of season 4 looked like it was a setup for another one of these scenarios where they were going to, you know, put everything up in the air, and then the next year they'd land where they were. They destroyed the new ship that they'd just gotten, but they found a planet that had like a rebel base living on it, and lo and behold, they found the missing Blake, who'd been gone all this time. So they found this nice new set that was going to be their new base, and they had a new ship, and they had Blake back. And then they shot every single person in the cast in the last like 2 minutes of the episode. Every single person, except possibly one. And it ends with the main character for the last 2 seasons standing surrounded by stormtroopers, and they've all got their guns aimed at him, and he's got this tiny, like, little phaser pistol, and you just hear him laughing as it fades to the credits, and then you hear a lot of gunfire. And that's how they ended it, because they were going to make sure that there wasn't another season. Ever.
Wow. Sundance Kid and Butch Cassidy and Sundance Kid ending, huh?
And... but the thing is, it's still been continued in all sorts of other medium, like books and stuff, featuring everyone who wasn't shot to death in the last episode. because that's how fanon works sometimes. So, but yeah, I think...
where we left off, and we are kind of hitting the end of time, too, so...
Okay, go ahead with your thing, Jules, and then we'll wrap it up after whatever you were gonna...
Oh, I always kind of wondered why in these CSI shows they never mix it up by just having some crime that's just easily, ridiculously solvable, and then everybody just goes home and screws around for the rest of the episode. But then that would make your intelligence, whatever.
They did that on one episode of Law & Order. I remember it was a very different... like, it was a completely different structured episode where instead of having one thing, they just had, like, 3 stupid things. Like, one guy, when they the police started questioning him. Not even like he wasn't even a suspect. They were just trying to get information. He was like, "All right, I admit it. You caught me. I did it. I admit it. I'm guilty of everything. Throw me in jail." And everything that they had was like that, where nobody wanted to fight them. And they just like blew through three different episodes in a row, or three different cases in a row, because they were just,
but they were just slam dunk cases, like, oh, okay, well, that was easy. Let's go get some lunch.
Yeah, pretty much. It was like all three of the things were just like softballs or slow pitches. Slow pitches, that's what I was going for. So, yeah, lies that authors tell. I think we're just about done here. We've really... I once again challenge and invite anyone listening to this, if we've accidentally missed some huge thing here that we should have covered, you know, throw it up in the comments on the Webcast Beacon Network website. We will be happy to tell you that you're wrong. It's webcastbeacon.com is the new address. The Tropecast has its own Twitter account now. It's at the Tropecast. So if you want to follow that for any sort of official type announcements, as well as while we're in the preparation phases for new episodes, a lot of times I'll throw out options and opportunities and get people's opinion on it. I do that through my own Twitter account, and I will also be doing that through the Tropecast account from now on. So there is also that. And I think we're just about out of places to go with this, or am I lying? No, we're pretty much done here.
You so. Also can get a hold of the Tropecast at tropecast@gmail.com specifically.
Yes, yes, if you want to email us. So I am Adam Smithy of the Apple of Discord. .com and webcomichell.com.
And I am Jeff Jacks, questionablecontent.net. Wait, no, I'm not. I'm Alex Heberling of alexesguide.net.
I'm Jules Rivera of valkyriesquadron.com.
And that mysterious man behind the curtain is Fess, who's distracted right now, probably.
Fess, put your pants back on.
Of PSI and too many things to name, and he also has his thumbs in Ardra and like 16 other web
whoa,
comics.
Whoa, no.
I think he means that you are creatively involved with Ardra. Yeah.
That sounds less nasty, but yeah, okay.
Yes.
Well, yeah, but where's the fun in that?
It's a PG comic.
Right. Right, but this isn't.
Anyway, it's over. Podcast.
What, am I the only person that's ever thought of that?
Yes, apparently. You should feel bad right about now.
Seriously. I mean, there's all...
Seriously. I don't know. I don't have a penis, so this is not even an issue for me.